many things can make it hard to fall in love. You're shy and they're extroverted. You're adventurous and they're cautious. Or maybe you're agnostic and they're a rabbi. That's the premise of Netflix's Nobody Wants This. The series stars Kristen Bell and Adam Brody, and there's plenty of romantic comedy banter and good chemistry, but there are also some pretty deep questions about faith and compatibility, and they get pretty serious, not only about love, but also about Judaism. The series just came back for a second season, so we thought it was the perfect time to revisit our conversation about the show. I'm Linda Holmes, and today we're talking about Nobody Wants This on Pop Culture Happy Hour from NPR. Joining me today is Sarah Ventry. She's NPR's religion and spirituality producer. Hello, Sarah. Welcome to the show. I'm so happy to see you.
Hi, Linda. It's so good to see you, too.
In Nobody Wants This, Kristen Bell plays Joanne, who makes a podcast about relationships with her sister, Morgan. She's played by Justine Loop, who is probably best known for playing Willa on Succession. Then there's Adam Brody, who plays Noah, a rabbi who's recently broken up with the girlfriend his family adored. His closest confidant is his brother, Sasha, played by Timothy Simons. You might know him as the tall guy on Veep. When Joanne and Noah meet at a party, they like each other immediately.
You're a real-life rabbi?
It's hot, right?
I mean, sort of.
But there are some hurdles for them when it comes to being together, not only for all the usual reasons, insecurities, old business, meddling family, but because Noah's commitments to his Jewish faith and his leadership in his faith community are serious and meaningful, and it's not clear whether he can have a partner who isn't part of those things. Nobody Wants This was created by writer and podcaster Erin Foster based on her story of falling in love with her husband, who's Jewish, which she wasn't when they met. It is streaming on Netflix now. Sarah, this was really super my jam because I am a romantic comedy person and I like these leads and their chemistry. My understanding is that it was a little bit less your jam than my jam. Talk to me about that.
This is true. So I'm not the biggest fan of romantic comedies, but I really like when they're super weird or when there's like some sort of quirky, odd, unexpected thing about them, but not in like a quirky twee way, like in a sort of uncomfortable way. I like discomfort. So I think for me, look, a lot of Jewish music is sung in harmonic minor key. Mm-hmm. There's something a little bit sad. Mm-hmm. There's a little tinge of unexpectedness. Mm-hmm. I want this in my romantic comedies, particularly when I'm seeing what is billed to me as a hot rabbi romantic comedy.
Yeah, you know, that makes sense to me because, like, I'm a fan of both of these performers, Adam Brody and Kristen Bell. I've enjoyed both of them in other things. I think they are both good rom-com leads, and I enjoyed them a lot together. I think they have terrific chemistry. They've both done other shows where they've done kind of fun back and forth dialogue, and that part of it worked really well here for me, but that's because I am a rom-com person and I am a sucker for a banter scene.
Seem to be going through something.
Oh, no, I'm just in constant need of attention.
I respect that. I also like attention. I say I don't, but I do.
You do, right?
Yes. Sorry, I'm cute. I like when people notice.
There you go. You are cute. I noticed.
In a romantic comedy, you're always going to see people who meet cute, as they say. And one of the things that I think they're going for in this show that is intentional is that these people quickly conclude that they're pretty much perfect for each other, except for this major issue of he's a rabbi and she's not Jewish.
Right. This one major part of not only your profession, but like it's your vocation, it's your identity, it's your everything.
You're not by chance wrestling with your faith, are you? Considering throwing it all away? Because with all of the and the flirting, you really don't feel like a rabbi.
Yeah. Yeah. I know I play up the Torah bad boy vibe, but no, I'm all in on this thing.
What I did like about it was I don't see a lot of things about anybody whose faith is super, super important to them. And it's not a thing that television tends to be great at or willing to wade into. And it's not presented like this is really just an odd couple thing. And, you know, sure, okay, well, he'll be Jewish and she won't be Jewish and love conquers all. And they'll, you know, it's treated more seriously than that. And I did appreciate, I think, that part.
I did appreciate that part, although there was one sort of really striking thing in that vein that really bothered me that I couldn't quite get past, which is that at some point he broaches the question of whether or not she may consider conversion as a possible solution to this problem. Religiously speaking, this is not how this conversation should go. I think in practical terms, this is probably how it does go in some relationships.
Yeah.
Jews actually don't believe in proselytization. In fact, traditionally, if you want to convert to Judaism, the rabbi is supposed to deny you three times. Like, you have to really want it and be really persistent about it.
Oh, I did not know that.
Yeah. So the idea that a rabbi of all people would be the one trying to do it. And there is sort of a moment where he kind of realizes that her, in considering converting, that she's considering it for him. And he kind of says, like, oh, but also for you, right? Like, because this is really important and you have to do it for yourself. Mm-hmm. And it's very clear that she is not in that place. A lot of times when we think about religious people and we see representation of a religious person in TV or movies, the person is either completely secular or like completely on the other end of the spectrum and hyper religious. And so the idea that he's a rabbi, but he's not Orthodox, like he goes to Friday night services and leads a service at temple and then afterwards goes to a bar, like that is a much more kind of liberal reform Judaism that we don't see as much of. And so even in that context, the idea that it would be such a problem that he was dating a non-Jew, and then he would go so far as to ask her to convert when that is like truly not something you're supposed to do is really was quite striking to me.
I would tend to suspect that part of what happened in the writing is that the subtleties of this are hard to convey. But I think in a way that's what the show is getting at, is that ultimately it's so common for romantic comedies to kind of take the position that like anything you do for love is noble, right? And I do think this show gets as far as to say, that's not really true. And for both of them, it's a thing where they have to think, like, if you're only converting because you want to marry this person or because you want to stay with this person, are you really converting at all? Or are you just pretending to convert in a sense? Like, it's a sort of a how do you know that you mean it thing that I think they would like to kind of probably deal with more subtly than they ultimately can. But I think that's one of the things the show is trying to be about. But I agree with you that they don't entirely get there.
Yeah, I do think that one thing they did well in this respect, though, is that so in religious like journalism and like scholarly religion, they actually refer to someone like her as a nun, which is N-O-N-E, which means that she is somewhere on the spectrum of atheist or agnostic or spiritual but not religious,
okay,
or like has a set of beliefs, but they're not really contained. And actually, I would argue that she might not even be any of those things, because like her beliefs seem to be non-existent and also kind of terrible. Like, I think this is what part of what I didn't like about this was that she's actually doesn't seem to me like a very good person.
Yeah.
And she doesn't really care about being a good person. And at some point, I think it's her sister says to her, you don't even have beliefs. But there is a moment where she sort of realizes that non-belief is belief, and that not having a belief that is spiritual in nature is also meaningful and is also something. And so it's not so simple as to just say, well, it's important to the other person, so I guess I can do it. And that I thought was kind of interesting.
It's funny because her podcast is about relationships, and clearly falling in love and finding a partner is something she's very, very focused on, or she thinks she's very, very focused on. So to her, that's kind of the ultimate goal, is to find somebody and fall in love. She ultimately realizes like, oh, I can't, even if I really, really think this might be the best person I'm ever going to find otherwise, I can't disrespect his religious beliefs in this way. And I can't kind of sacrifice my own compass to please somebody else.
Exactly. She comes to this realization by talking to the rabbi's ex, who is Jewish, who is religious, who sort of has this like very old-fashioned dream of being the, they call it the Rebbetzin, the rabbi's wife.
He represents the temple. So you represent the temple. People look to you as an example, like a good example. That's a lot of pressure. You look so scared right now. No, it should feel like good pressure, you know?
you see so many moments early on where Joanne, she's just so inconsiderate of other people. Like, she's sort of in the very first episode, like, tells her date she has to go to the bathroom and then just leaves, yes. just, like, ditches him.
Yes.
She routinely ghosts people. She's, like, super selfish and self-absorbed. And so I think it sort of takes a lot for her to realize that, like, mm-hmm. this isn't just about her wanting to fall in love mm-hmm. and have this beautiful, magical mm-hmm. thing, but that actually there's a lot of collateral damage that can come. And that when you marry someone, you're not just marrying them, but you're marrying their family and their community and, like, so many things about them.
Yeah. I mean, in a way, it's a romantic comedy that ultimately comes around to the idea that romantic love is not everything. And that is somewhat uncommon.
Wait, do you think that's where it lands? Because I did not get that from it.
Well, I think it's unclear where it lands.
Okay.
It's unclear that you're not at another point that's going to turn out to be a temporary solution to their problem.
Okay.
We talked a little bit about what kind of a Jewish person he is, and he is more a liberal, as you said, sort of rabbi.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Other than that, how does Judaism in this show, how much does it look like Judaism as you know it?
So it was interesting because there was I did notice that there were a mix of things that sort of happened and didn't happen. So, for example, there's like a scene where Joanne brings a gift of a charcuterie plate to
yes.
the rabbi's parents' house.
Yes.
And it has prosciutto on it.
Uh-huh.
And first of all, she apparently doesn't know that prosciutto is pork, which yes. is its yes. own issue.
Yes.
But then, you know, there's this thing like, oh, we can't possibly have pork in our house. This is a kosher household. Number one, the plate also had milk and meat on it together, which by definition is not kosher, even if it had been beef and not pork.
Yeah.
So there's like another kosher problem there.
Right.
The other thing is I was like, oh, this is a family that keeps kosher. That's kind of interesting. Or they keep some type of kosher style. But then there's another scene where he tells his brother, Sasha, I want to do Havdalah with Joanne. Now, Havdalah is the service that marks the end of Shabbat that happens on Saturday night at sundown, and it separates the holy time of Shabbat from the kind of everyday nature of the week. It's like the beginning of the week.
Right.
Sasha doesn't even know what Havdalah is, and that, for example, was like, felt incongruous to me.
Havdalah is seriously slept on.
No, I completely agree.
Yeah.
That's the dessert with the custard, right?
No, it's a ceremony to mark the end of Shabbat with the three stars. You light the candle, you smell the spices. Nothing? It'll come back to you.
But okay, I think that they were doing some interesting signposting with things like the kosher. He's wearing a yarmulke a lot of the time. You know, he says certain things that even like, oh, well, we have to wait till there are three stars in the sky. That's like a more traditional sort of way of understanding Havdalah. But then he's like doing it in this way where he can convince his non-Jewish girlfriend that Judaism is magical, which mm-hmm. is not something you're supposed to even try to convince somebody
mm-hmm.
of. So I think it was a little bit mixed up, but I also felt like there were things about it that did feel true to me as a representation of kind of liberal reform Judaism, particularly like they're on the West Coast. It felt super West Coast to me. I also was thinking a lot about Rami.
Yes. Rami is Rami Youssef's Hulu series, sort of loosely based on his experiences and his own family.
Right. So I'm a huge fan of Rami. So Rami, his family are Egyptian immigrants. He's a first-generation American. He's Muslim. And he's navigating kind of this identity, both as a first-generation American, but also as a Muslim American, and trying to figure out what it means to be a millennial and a Muslim American who steps in between secular and religious societies mm-hmm. on the regular. But I think he sort of gets at this question of like, do I go to mosque on Friday and then go to a party on Friday night?
Mm-hmm.
This did not get it in nearly as nuanced of a way, but I think because it was background, whereas in Rami, I think it's foreground.
Right.
I think that they were just trying to give these little signposts to people that like, hey, he's Jewish and he's doing the thing
yeah.
and it's not just incidental.
Well, and I also think it's more complicated in this show in the sense of trickier to make it work because Noah is a rabbi. And so one of the things that's happening in Rami is that he's just kind of grown up in his faith. And he comes to this really interesting point in adulthood where he's asking a lot of questions that he hasn't always asked. And I feel like Noah, as a rabbi, would have gone through a whole process of education where figuring out what his Judaism is going to look like probably would have happened during the course of that education.
Yeah, definitely. And interestingly, he actually did have a really beautiful answer when Joanne asks him, why did you want to be a rabbi? He has this really lovely answer about how he uses it as a way to make sense of the world.
And when I started paying attention to the lessons of the Torah and was exposed to the rituals and the traditions, it allowed me to view the world as a much safer and much more meaningful place. And I knew from a very young age that I wanted to spend my life trying to help keep it alive.
And I think that Joanne is trying to make sense of the world, but she's doing it not only not in a religious context, which many people do it not in a religious context, mm-hmm. but again, I think she seems to have such a small moral compass that now she's with someone who has a big moral compass, and it's like jarring to her.
Yeah.
And I think being with him does make her think more about right and wrong. Like, she has these moments where she's like, I would have done this before, but I'm not going to do it now.
Right, right.
I also imagined sort of an alternate reality in which, separate from the main storyline of the rabbi and Joanne, there were a lot of other couples that get together in unexpected ways. Mm-hmm. Namely, I actually think that Sasha's wife should be lesbian lovers with... with the rabbi's ex.
Oh, with the rabbi's ex. Sure.
And then that frees up Sasha. So that helps a little bit, too.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. There's some fun business between Sasha and Morgan, Joanne's sister. They kind of become, they sort of start out as like having a lot of friction, and then they kind of become pals.
You're the loser sibling.
What?
And no judgment. I'm the loser sibling. I mean, it's hard to compete when your brother's the Jewish Jesus. Doesn't make as much sense with you, though. You're, like, cool as hell. You always have a witty comeback for everything. You're, like, a smoke show. You got, like, this hot Earth Mother vibe going on.
You know, but I enjoyed both of those actors and that little stuff, too. It's kind of playful and fun.
I enjoyed them. I would be remiss if I didn't say the thing that I was most annoyed about, though,
yes.
Linda, which was, how the hell does this podcast, A, exist, B, have a huge listenership,
Sarah,
C, get monetized?
Sarah,
listen, the most unrealistic thing y'all did was make a situation in which two sisters who hold bad microphones in poor placement on their couch and who don't know how to use XLR cables have a monetized podcast that makes all their money.
Yes. So they have this super popular podcast that it seems to me they make alone, which... that is not a thing.
Nope.
Especially if neither one of you seems like you know what you're doing.
They said that somebody wrote a review where they complained about her taking too many pee breaks. And I was just like, if these people don't know how to edit out their own bathroom breaks, listen, this is a microcosm of larger issues.
Yes, it is another entry in the long line of shows and movies about podcasts that do not know about what things look like.
Yeah.
Well, we want to know what you think about Nobody Wants This. Find us at facebook.com/PCHH. That brings us to the end of our show. Sarah Ventry, you are a delight. I am always so happy to see you. Thank you for being here.
You are a delight. Thank you so much for having me.
This episode was produced by Liz Metzger and edited by Mike Katziff. Our supervising producer is Jessica Reedy, and Hello Come In provides our theme music. Thank you for listening to Pop Culture Happy Hour from NPR. I'm Linda Holmes, and we'll see you all next time.